Hey guys, in honor of it being Thursday the 13th, we decided to release a new episode, Friday the 13th, part 6, The Final Friday, which almost every part of is not true, but whatever. I figured you'd want some new content for those Patreon subscribers, although the Patreon, of course, is getting new episodes this month anyway. But thanks for listening, subscribing, sharing, and doing all those things that you do. Thanks, guys. It's summer, and it's hot, so let's go to camp. This week, we're watching Friday the 13th, Part 4, The Final Friday. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Movies and Riff Ron Cineprom. What panel we have?
Hello, this is Daniel, a frequent contributor to popdose.com, and somebody who also has macheted someone in the back to death.
Author Matthew W. Quinn, who ran a 5K this morning to support Mutual Aid Myanmar, and you should look into that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like good work for Myanmar. In the meantime, we are talking about a Jason Voorhees movie in honor of summer and camp and hanging out with the... well, a terrible, terrible plot. We've done Jason X before, and we've done the original Friday the 13th a million years ago. This is a bad movie.
Yes, it is. The Friday the 13th movies have the same... issue that the Fast and Furious movies had, in that don't get good until they become ridiculous. And at this point, they were still trying to take themselves seriously.
This movie takes itself so seriously. This is an oddly stacked cast. I don't know. We have Crispin Glover in this and Corey Feldman. Corey Feldman being Tommy Jarvis, who will come back in most of the rest of these movies.
Yep. He's definitely in Jason Lives, if I recall correctly.
He's in 5 and 6.
Well, and there's someone else playing him in other movies, I believe, too.
Yeah, yes. In 5 and 6, he's played as an adult, and he's also in like some non-canonical spin-offs. He's an ambulance driver.
What non-canonical spin-off would that be?
I don't know. I just saw it on the Tommy Jarvis Wikipedia page I posted on Twitter after I live tweeted the last third of this movie.
Yeah, and so he's in 3 of these, and he also shows up, I think, in the video game, which came out a couple of years ago, which is...
Wait, what?
Yeah, there's a Friday the 13th video game, which came out in 2017.
You're kidding me. There's a video game around this
nonsense?
What is this?
You just play, it's like Doom, except you got a machete, and it's going stabbing
people.
No,
better than that. It's an asymmetrical, like, multiplayer game, so you have a timer, and randomly one of the... let's say 10 of us are playing. One of the 10 of you is Jason Voorhees, and your game is to kill as many of them before the time runs out as possible. Yeah, it's kind of fun. I played it once or twice. It's okay.
I'll take your word for it that it's okay.
Because I played the Evil Dead video game, and basically it was Ash fighting zombies.
For what system was that? I have no idea.
I don't remember. I had PlayStations, and maybe I rented it from the store.
There were a couple of those. One of them is just an Evil Dead knockoff. Excuse me, a Resident Evil knockoff.
Yeah, there's apparently a PS5 game that's Evil Dead based coming out next year, so...
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that's not the one you played.
No, this was... I vaguely remember seeing it at a Toys R Us, so you can tell how long ago this was.
I'm the oldest gamer.
No, I remember the video game section at Toys R Us, and I remember the video game section back in the day when Best Buy would sell Genesis games. It was a good time.
I was talking to some people at lunch today, talking about how I remember the Omni and the original Brave Stadium, and I realized I am old.
Yes.
You are, but I'm only, a year younger than you, so there you have it. So you probably had the Commodore 64 Evil Dead game.
With a smaller pixel for a chainsaw.
That's right. Actually, probably the PlayStation 1 for 2000.
Makes more sense.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're doing a Friday the 13th movie, which means there's a bunch of vaguely sexy teens getting together, and Jason's going to kill them all.
I'm sorry, vaguely? Did you not see Crispin Glover in this movie?
So we got to talk about the sexless Crispin Glover here.
Did you just call him Christian Glover?
Crispin.
Like a bad snack for kids, Crispin Glover. This is the year before Back to the Future, where he plays Marty McFly's dad, George McFly. And then sues Steven Spielrock, previous episode, for his likeness in the second one, which was used without his permission, which is really something.
Yeah, that was a big deal back in the day. Oh boy, this movie. I mean, the weird thing about it is this series was already famous, right? And this was supposed to be the big finale, which I guess they did.
Because the title was the final chapter, and they couldn't keep themselves away for more than a year.
Well, I guess it was profitable. That's why they couldn't keep it away for more than a year. But I have no idea why they tried to end it in the first place. I guess because critics hated it.
Well, they wanted to be more creative because there's not a final girl in this one. It's a final 12-year-old Tom Savini Mary Sue.
And not his Tom sister. Savini. Yeah, I think Corey Feldman is.
I think he's supposed to be like a little young Tom Savini because he's got all those monster masks in his room.
Cool dude, by the way. I met him once.
Who, Jason Voorhees?
Yes, okay. Actually. Quiet guy, but nice.
As long as you didn't disturb his rest and solitude.
Disturb my slumber, blah.
By smoking weed and screwing in his campground.
Wouldn't that be awesome if Crispin Glover had been Jason at any point?
I'm evil. Come on, man. Give me a... Stop having sex on my property, man. He's bad in this. Well,
they're all bad.
This movie does a terrible job with the cast that is not Tommy Jarvis or his sister or his mother.
Or actually kind of does do a terrible job with all of them.
It does. Well,
the sister and brother, I think, were decent. I just had a lot of problems telling the other characters apart or getting their names.
Well, that's because they were the horny teenagers who were all going to die.
Yeah, my friend David and I call them teen slasher meat, except these people are probably in their 20s.
As was most teen slasher victims in the 80s.
Yeah. So the whole story behind this is that a guy named Frank Mancuso...
God bless you.
Yeah, right. the father, Frank Mancuso Sr., was the head of Paramount, and his son, Frank Mancuso Jr., in an act of pure nepotism, had purchased the Friday series... and had produced 2, 3, and 4, and they wanted to send this one out on a bang. So Savini comes back, does all the effects, because he also wanted to see the character dead. And then this movie, which cost $2.2 million, grossed almost $40 million, and they're like, who can say no to a sequel, baby?
Now, wait a minute, they wanted to end the franchise on a bang, and this is what they came up with?
They also wanted to end it with the previous one, which also did significantly better. But again, like... I'm a sucker. I would have seen this in theaters, too.
Yeah, speaking of previous ones, they actually sum up the first three movies in like a campfire story.
Yes,
that's... By a bunch of people who we never see again at Camp Crystal Lake.
And also don't die. Like those should be dead meats. Like,
that's how you should introduce movies, with them.
It should be Crispin Glover and his loser friend who's like, God, I don't
know. The one who laughs at him for being a dead fuck?
A dead fuck, which is something they say way too many times in this.
Because Crispin Glover's character is so incredibly insecure about his sexual talents that, you know, am I a dead fuck is a running joke throughout the entire movie.
He's just waiting until he can rescue the woman of his dreams from a parking lot where Biff Tannen is molesting her and all that fun stuff.
Well, but, like, this should be the story that... Not, I mean, he looks like Sam Levine. Little Sam Levine keeps telling Crispin Glover in the back, like, that's what they're talking about. They're like, you know, Crystal Lake, is the place where that Jason Voorhees guy killed everyone.
Was it Robot Chicken that had Scooby-Doo at a Camp Crystal Lake?
It 100% was.
Yeah.
Like, Scoob. Oh.
Oh, boy, that would have been something. You know what? That's the crossover I want. A movie of Scooby-Doo tracking down Jason Voorhees.
Better movie.
Yeah,
you're not,
better
you're
than
not
this.
You're not you when you're hungry, so they give him Scooby snacks and cut to Jason like sitting like around the campfire with all the horny teen just smoking weed.
I'd pay to watch Jason Voorhees smoke weed.
I mean, Yeah, of course.
I imagine he gets quite a bit of hotboxing in with that mask that he's wearing. So, was Sean S. Cunningham the director of the original movie or the producer?
Yes.
Was he gone by that point?
He was long gone. This is directed by Joe Zito, and it's just garbage.
It had a really awful production, I'm told.
Canon Films veteran Joe Zito?
Yeah, Joseph Zito, who did Invasion USA the next year.
Ah, the classic Chuck Norris vehicle.
Yes, Missing in Action as well the same year. Yeah, this is a canon, and this that makes sense, because this feels like a cheap, terrible production. You mean you probably could have gotten Chuck Norris to show up as a sheriff, because he's cheap and terrible at this point.
He wouldn't have done it, because at some point Jason would have had to kill him, and he would have insisted that he beat up Jason.
Just a drive-through, just like, no. It's that fucking, is that like Fast and the Furious nonsense where neither Dom can never lose a fight because Vin Diesel refuses and The Rock's like, no, I have to be a large sexless man.
Well, maybe he can do a roundhouse kick and knock Jason's mask off.
I mean, he just needs to be the person who shows up like that redneck in the previous movies. He goes, you know, Jason's around. You shouldn't be camping here, kids. Like, that's all you need.
All right, so should we go ahead and get into the quote unquote.
I can do that if necessary.
Please.
All right. It's
hold up one sec. Should we go ahead and get into the quote unquote plot of this movie?
Yes, I will handle that dreadful task for you.
Well, thank you, Matt. Go ahead.
It's right in the aftermath, I think, of 3. So Jason has reemerged after 20 years of living in the woods and has just killed like 20 people, and we have an opening montage revealing that he is apparently dead, and they take him to the morgue. Where the creepy coroner is just being creepy. Like, at one point, he like leaves his sandwich on a corpse so he can sign paperwork. And
this is the same coroner that on the job is watching like a softcore porn of 80s fitness women.
And trying to hook up with one of the nurses.
Who clearly is not into it, even though for whatever reason they almost have sex later.
And even though last time we saw Jason, he had an axe embedded in his face. He's not dead.
Well, somebody somewhere was having sex, and he just can't have that.
So. Yeah, and I mean, because again, remember, these are all old school Christian morality plays. So anytime someone's about to have sex, drink, or smoke weed, they have to die.
I would love to see I wouldn't love it, but it would be entertaining to see a remake of Friday the 13th by the people who made God's Not Dead.
I would say yes, but also, do it like, I forget who made it, but that Witches with 2 V's movie. Like, because when I, like, teaching, like, Jonathan Edwards and stuff in school, I'm like, this is a Puritan horror movie. Like, they wouldn't recognize Star Wars, but if you showed them Friday the 13th, they would recognize it, because that's what it is. Sister Maple, we shouldn't be so intimate. And then she shoves her tits in his face. And then a monster comes out and murders them. That's every Puritan sermon. That's every Puritan play. Like, you've studied some medieval stuff.
So,
like, that's what it is.
In other words, Jason is a hardcore Calvinist.
Oh, dude, he
doesn't have a big enough hat.
That's true.
But with he did vote for pretty much every... He voted for Rand Paul 3 times.
Oh, boy.
You know, we need to keep the sheriffs out of Crystal Lake.
Jason anyway. Is a sovereign citizen. He claims legal jurisdiction over Camp Crystal Lake.
That's funny.
And no trespassing.
So anyway, after the morgue, Jason comes back to life. There's a few jump scares with that, and he murders some people there. And then he shows up at this like neighborhood that's like Tommy Jarvis and his family are in one cabin across the street are a bunch of horny teens.
Yeah, it's like I think the backstory is that Mrs. Jarvis and her husband are separated, and she and the kids are staying at this cabin.
And big canoe in northern Georgia or something.
And meanwhile, a bunch of horny teens rent the other cabin nearby. And meanwhile, the two twins, who are actually British, I looked up the actresses, who join in the fun later. And meanwhile, both Jason and this mysterious Byronic hero newcomer are both heading for Crystal Lake with destruction in mind.
Hmm. I mean, that's about as good as we can get it. This movie doesn't... Friday the 13th, especially in its original entries, didn't care about its plots. They didn't try and do anything.
Well, and I will say, 3 is kind of fun, but it's after this one that they go truly nuts.
Yeah.
Right, like, and that's, I mean, we were going to either do this one or number 6. 6 is the one that's crazy go nuts.
Oh, the with Jason coming back to life because yeah. there's that metal rod that Tommy shoves through his chest.
Right, yeah, and lightning strikes it.
Yeah, because yeah, because the 5th movie is a copycat killer who pretends to be Jason. The 6th movie, Jason is brought back to life as a killer, as a zombie.
Right.
7, is that the one with the him fighting the Carrie?
Jason versus Carrie. Yeah. One we saw, we watched because we were seeing We Hate Movies or whatever it was that was.
It was. Yes. It was we, needed. And then was, after that it, was Manhattan.
9 is Jason Goes to Hell. Jason X is in space.
Previous episode. And then Freddy versus Jason is after that, which is, I mean, all of these are stay tunes. I mean, I still love this series.
And then there was a reboot in 2009 that had one of the people from Supernatural in it.
It did.
And apparently it's actually shared a universe with Transformers.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
The Trent character.
Oh, boy.
It's bad.
So why the hell then have we never gotten a movie with Jason Voorhees stabbing Optimus Prime?
Because Optimus Prime is like 30 feet tall. It wouldn't work.
Do you think... I beg to differ. Do you think Jason would care?
He should kill all the Witwickies, which would be already better.
Yeah.
We're going to get
Megan Fox is the perfect Jason victim.
He is. Or she is.
Or perfect final girl. She's just cut him in half with a chainsaw.
You know what? I want to see that movie.
Yeah. Why are you laughing? That's a good idea. That's a good pitch. Anyway, so, I mean, we should talk about, as they're leaving the hospital, Jason shows up behind them when they're making out and kills Axel.
Yes. The coroner's name is Axel.
Axel Burns with a hacksaw and then kills the nurse with a scalpel.
Yep.
Solid choices. We're back in, we're in prime form.
He doesn't just kill Axel with a hacksaw. He, like, twists his head off and saws it off.
Yeah, because Axel, no, I posted on Twitter, you know, don't make out with Axel. You don't know where he's been.
Yeah?
Because he's making necrophile jokes.
He is.
Well, you know what? I think I know where this Axel's been. He's been in the jungle, baby.
He's gonna die.
Yep. And we just broke Nick.
Okay, well, that means you can take
Welcome
over the pod.
To the jungle!
We got fun and games. We got everything you want.
How we going, Burns? We are the people that define.
And
whatever you may need.
Come on. You can have anything you like, but you better not take it from me. Welcome to the jungle.
Jungle! Welcome to the jungle!
You're gonna die.
Your singing voice is just terrific.
Man. Yeah. I'm a bit out of practice. I was a Harmonia Gardens polka dancer in Hello, Dolly.
Oh, there you go.
Hello, Dolly.
Are you Freddy Krueger?
No, that's
a Freakazoid.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, bonjour. Lomi. Here we go. Lomi. Give him food, waiters.
Dude. Freakazoid needs to... We pitched this a minute ago, but goddammit, Steven Spielrock, you gotta make more Freakazoid. You already made more Animaniacs, and Freakazoid appeared in one of them.
Yes, he did.
Anyway, so at that point, he goes to Crystal Lake. We see Pamela Voorhees' grave at one point.
Yes,
and
we do.
And a hitchhiker who gets killed. She was funny. She had like a sign that said, you know, to Canada, and then when people drive by, it says, fuck you.
Yeah, this yeah. like short. She had like short brown hair. I'm not crazy, but like it's just she's a brassy character.
The entire time I'm watching her, I'm thinking of George Carlin and James Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yes, 100%. And then what? What happens if you don't give head? Well, if you gotta give head,
yeah. Ass, gas, or grass. That's what you got to do.
She's a hippie chick. I'm sure she's got grass.
I'm sure she's got all three.
And, I mean, you're in New Jersey. What else are you going to do? In the meantime...
Pizza?
In New Jersey?
In New Jersey?
Gross!
In the meantime, we get passed on the road after she gets sliced and diced. by, I guess, the heroes. There's Paul with his girlfriend, Sarah. Or Sam, excuse me. Sarah's the virgin, right? We get Doug, the boyfriend. We get the awkward Jimmy, played by Crispin Glover, and the loser, Ted, who is the one I said looked like Sam Levine. And they're on the way. They're the ones who pass the hitchhiker, and they pass Pamela Voorhees' tombstone, and the hitchhiker then is killed by Jason, and they then become the target of his score.
Yeah, and Corey Feldman, how again was he introduced in this movie?
He's Tommy Jarvis, the 12-year-old.
Right, but how did they introduce him and his family?
Trish and Tommy and the dog Gordon are the neighbors of this house.
Oh, Gordon, the dog that gets thrown out the window at one point?
Yes.
Aw, man.
He got thrown out of the window? I thought he just jumped out of the window.
No, he's chucked.
Yeah.
So their neighbors are Trish and Tommy. Trish is the sister.
Right.
We eventually meet the mom. And we're also introduced to the two twins, Tina and Terry Moore, who show up and immediately want to go skinny dipping just to remind us what film franchise we're in.
By the way, do you know how, according to my notes, Trish and her mom are introduced?
How's that?
Jogging in 80s workout gear.
Oh, yeah, I think that's true. I do remember that now.
And they drive past them, right?
They drive past them, and they get home, and Tommy's introduced because he's wearing a homemade mask.
And he's playing a video game I could swear I played at the East Cobb El Toro when I was like six.
All right. What game would that be?
Yeah, some sort of thing where you fly up a canyon and a fighter and stuff. I can't even remember.
Well, anyway, that's how we're introduced to Tommy.
Yeah.
I mean, flying up a canyon and stuff, that's a rather broad range, but
well, he's watching the neighbors get busy and flying up that canyon.
Yeah, and then, of course, we're also introduced to Gordon, who is adorable.
The dog who's about to die.
It happens later, but that was hard. That was the worst scene in the movie when that dog got thrown out the window. All right, so among other things in this movie is scenes of Corey Feldman watching a teenager across the street get undressed.
While doing backflips in his bed.
Yeah. Yep, he was jumping up and down his bed. It's like, what the hell? Again, the later Jason movies knew that the joke was on how obsessed it was with teens having sex, right? This is still trying to play that whole trope straight, and it doesn't work. It's just hilarious.
I don't think it was that funny either. Just meh.
Well, I mean, this movie is completely misguided in what it thinks it's doing. But, like, I mean, we can establish this. In order to show that they're sexually promiscuous teens, they're doing the skinny dipping thing. Like, and it's incredibly awkward. Because, like, we were talking about it before. I believe this was off mic. But, like, the whole thing is that Ted is making fun of Jimmy because he just broke up with his girlfriend because she said he was a bad fuck.
A dead fuck.
A dead fuck, right.
And he spends the entire movie angsting about it.
Well, you?
Oh, yeah, and then he tries to make up for it by scoring with someone later.
And which, then he's like, was I a dead fuck?
And she says no. Which...
And then he goes and steals her underwear and gives it to Rob, who's a creep.
That's right. That is a thing that happens in this movie. Good. You know what? I've even got this in my notes. If you take out all the Jason scenes in the first couple Friday the 13th movies...
By the way, it's very easy to remove Jason from this movie. He barely's in it.
But the first kill happens 14 minutes into this movie, but if you remove all the Jason scenes from this movie, what you have is Mormon porn. That is what these movies are.
Well, I was
Mormon porn.
Why the Mormon part specifically?
Because it's so chaste.
I was going to say, I was wondering if you said you take Jason's movie, you have 16 candles.
No, 16 candles actually was trying to be a little bit classy, but in this case, oh boy. Good Lord. I mean, I seriously wouldn't be surprised if some of the actresses were cast, not by any screen test, but just by whether or not Larry Flint recommended them.
Well, I did some looking into some of the actresses. Like, the two twins are British. I think some of the other actresses were in, like, soap operas.
Yeah, let's talk
These were not complete unknowns. They were, I think, TV people.
Let's talk about those two twins. Who are they in this movie exactly?
I don't really know much about them. I just looked them up because that's how the one audition. They're like, do you have a twin? Like, well, yes. Like, okay, you can be in our movie.
So what are their characters doing in this movie? They just show up randomly at the house?
Yeah, maybe they're neighbors of the Jarvises and the Horn Dog Teens, and they want to get in on the Horn Dog Teens.
Well, understandably so. I mean, Crispin Glover's there, and you've got a prime young Crispin Glover. That's just... that's just real tempting right there. But here's another thing to me about this.
Is he the one who dances?
He's the dead fuck.
But is he... Again, this movie did a very bad job of differentiating and building up the non-Jarvis cast. So is he the one who dances with the girl in the pastels?
I believe so. I know he dances at one point, and it's really awkward.
Well, I did live tweet this. I'm like, that's how you do it. Doesn't matter if you're a dork, if you have the self-confidence. Because he gets her, she jumps up and starts dancing with him too, even if he's, well.
Why not? Well, one of the things that gets me about this movie is this was supposed to be the grand finale of what was already a popular franchise, right?
Mm-hmm.
It feels so low-key. I mean, like you said, Jason's barely in this, so it was you or Nick who just said that, and none of the quote-unquote kills are that great.
Yeah. I mean, the movie, about two-thirds of this movie, I thought was not very entertaining. It only starts getting entertaining when the teens are dead and it's the Jarvises versus Jason. Because, I mean, some of the way that he goes through the house doesn't make any sense. Like, he's into the house, he's out of the house, he's in the house. I mean, Rob is stoned out of his mind watching a stag film. So maybe Rob wouldn't notice. But, I mean, you've got, like, a 400-pound guy, probably covered in mud, going in and out of the building. Every time he goes in and out, someone dies. You think someone else would have noticed him tracking mud in or anything?
You'd think, but you'd be wrong, apparently. I mean, this movie, as a finale to Friday the 13th, is just terrible.
Yeah, that's one reason I like the movie Hatchet, because the teen slasher meat actually shows some degree of intelligence.
I mean, that's why I like Behind the Mask, if you've ever seen that, The Rise and Fall of Leslie Vernon.
No.
It's a great movie.
Well, I mean, half the Friday the 13th movies do it better than that, too. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because... So, I mean, we've talked about the twins, you've talked about everything, but, like, the problem with this movie is, first of all, you have to decide whether or not Jason is even going to be in this movie, which he's kind of not for most of it. And you know what I don't need? I don't need you to establish any of these characters without death. The best version of this, almost, and this doesn't count because it doesn't count, is Scream. Because you know what there is? There's death throughout, and you're establishing people. But there's so much in this movie where people are being established, but no one gives a shit.
You know what would have been great is if this movie had Jamie Lee Curtis in like the first 10 minutes. This is hinted at being a major character because she was, you know, in Halloween, she was already a Scream Queen at that point, and then she gets killed off like Drew Barrymore in Scream.
Yeah, we need a cold open death that isn't about that weird rapist who's trying to hit up with the nurses.
What we need is for this to matter, you know? This was originally planned to be the grand finale, and it just feels like a shit Friday the 13th sequel.
It's hitting the tropes without anyone caring. Like even like the weird sexy scenes... One of them is a direct ripoff of Jaws. Like, I'm not even going to pretend it's not.
Oh, the one with the twin that goes underwater.
Going swimming for no reason in the middle of the night. Oh, no, a shark.
Oh, that one. Apparently, the director was a real prick who wouldn't let her get out of the water between scenes. She got hypothermia.
Oh, so James Cameron directed this?
That's right.
His non-union eighth-rate equivalent.
There you go. Yes, that was almost a Simpsons reference right there. Well done.
Yeah. But Senor Sindler is bueno. You are muerte. You're El Diablo, excuse me. But yeah, I mean, we can get into this. Daniel and I are drinking wine because in order to get laid, Crispin Glover is trying to bring up wine to his lady fair. Where's the corkscrew? Hey, Ted? Ted? Where's the corkscrew?
And they find the corkscrew because Jason jams through his hand and nail him to the table so then he can take another weapon to him. And the other guy is so fried on whatever, he's
watching,
not noticing.
Victorian era pornography. I don't know where he found this.
And apparently that was what they were doing earlier. Is like most of the kids, for kids being a certain value of 25, are just sitting there watching it and they think it's hilarious.
That 1900s stag film collection that apparently exists.
Nonsense.
Is this the porno version of A Brave Little Toaster? You know, it's all the outdated stuff.
I don't even know how to respond to that joke.
Because a Brave Little Toaster, aren't they all the appliances at an old house?
Yeah, but you know what a toaster isn't? A naked woman who died of the black lung in 1919.
To be fair, though, we haven't seen the porn version of the Brave Little Toaster. It very well could be.
The Brave Little Porkster?
You know what? Here's money. Go make that.
That's right. The rest of this is just kind of a Jason Voorhees movie without any fun. Like, there's...
The makeup's good because, you know, Tom Savini's here.
Tom Savini showed up.
He sure did. Man, I wish there was still a market for people like him.
There needs to be. I mean, we just did the Flintstones in the Recording Order, which, you know, whatever. But, like, it's practical effects. This is practical effects.
There's a movie called The Void, which is all practical effects.
Was it good?
It was okay.
Okay.
But I'm saying they could have employed someone like Savini, or the Hensons even.
Well, Savini, I think, is past 70 at this point, so he's probably fine doing con appearances and getting money from that rather than actively working.
And Baker's passed, right?
Stan Winston's gone.
Winston passed.
I think Rick Baker's still with us.
But, like, you're right. Like, there was a time and a place with practical effects, and now CGI is taken over, which is just nonsense, which is a shame, because these movies all look like nothing in 10 years. Right? Like, people who are good with it, like Spielberg used to be, and like Peter Jackson, they use it so sparingly. They use it to fill gaps, not to make entire scenes. And that's kind of why I like these Friday movies overall, on average. Because there's squibs and there's practical effects. And...
Oh, that scene where Jason gets his hand sliced in half.
That hurt.
Yeah, between the middle and the ring fingers. That was great. It looked fantastic.
It had weight, right? It has weight. We can kind of get back to this, plot as it is.
Meanwhile, we have our Byronic hero, tall, dark, and dangerously good looking, who hitchhikes with them. He helps Tommy fix the engine of the car.
Oh, yeah,
and
that guy.
And he's the brother of one of the dead meats from an earlier movie who he's come to settle the score with Jason, who he has figured out isn't actually dead.
Yeah, his name is Rob, and he is the brother of Sandra from the second movie.
I learned that from Dr. Wolfula, if you haven't checked him out yet.
Oh, right. Yeah, there you go.
And he's got like a stash of newspaper clippings, and he comes with a gun that Jason is intelligent enough to disable early on.
So what do you think the biggest appeal of Friday the 13th movies is?
Tits.
Okay, that was one of them.
Probably a big part of it, and blood.
Well, blood. Because again, like, these are Christian morality plays, so there needs to be like, oh my god, my top fell off, and now he's going to kill her, right? Like, that's the name of the game.
There, in 40 minutes of this movie, there are 3 kills. What are we doing here?
Right.
I mean, who cares about the dead meat teens?
Yeah, they could have made... If they wanted to be a bit more creative. I thought they were trying to be more creative with the end. It's not a final girl. It's a final 12-year-old horror fan.
Which we'll get to terrible scene.
If they had more focus on Rob, you know, come to take revenge on Jason.
Yeah, I mean, and Rob is an interesting guy because everyone thinks that Jason is dead. He's not dead. And Rob's one of these people who smells a rat. He's like, nah, he can't die. I'm going to make sure he's dead in the ground. And so he shows up. I mean, and we talked about it earlier, but it's from a movie that comes out later. He's that asshole with all the guns from Tremors.
Yes.
Right? Like, he shows up and he's, like, ready for war against Jason. He's living on the edge. He's in a tent. All of which are terrible ideas, by the way. Every single one of them is a terrible idea. Meanwhile, he's seducing the young Trish Jarvis.
And Mrs. Jarvis is in no way concerned that her daughter has brought home the murder, not goth, murder 80s hair. And he's and Tommy is like, I'll take you to my room. And he's got all his like special effects creations in there. No one wonders why he's there.
Well, I mean, Tommy is meant to be Tom Savini, but you're right. I mean, this is supposed to be a weekend getaway for them, isn't it?
Well, it is. And hot off the heels of what I imagine is a terrible divorce. And for the kids on the other side, they're dying and no one seems to care because at this point, Paul's gotten a harpoon to the crotch and no one has even looked for him.
That does indeed happen.
For what's her name? Who got killed on the raft.
Yes, so,
and why did the raft not sink? He stabbed her through the bottom.
Oh, dude. He totally stabbed her right up the butt.
Is this the woman who talked about taking a strip and dip?
Yes.
She was mad that one of the twins was hitting on her boyfriend, so she just storms off, takes all her clothes off, and jumps in the pond, and that's when Jason kills her. Then her boyfriend, Paul, Paul, comes following after her, and then he gets the harpoon gun.
Yeah, he gets harpooned pretty hard to the crotch. Terry tries to leave the party at this point.
Raining and she rode in on her bicycle, which is stupid.
And then she gets stabbed by Jason as well.
She falls out. I think she goes out the window and lands on the roof of the car.
Also, I will say, too, this totally explains the relationship, and I don't know what your guys' high school and college friends were like, but Ted, who the entire time is calling his friend a dead fuck, is like making fun of him this whole time, and saying, you gotta get back on the horse, and Ted is the only one that is not within a sniff's distance of getting laid this entire movie, and the only one he was about to hook up with is the girl who gets killed on a bike, and she would rather die in a rainstorm. Because you leave this party, people already dying, it's raining, and you look back at this guy, and you're just like, I'd rather die in the rain. That's 100% what's happening. And that's it.
Yeah, his name is Ted, and he has a teddy bear he uses as a proxy for himself. Like telling girls to kiss the teddy bear.
Oh my god, yes. That was so weird.
He's had weird sex with that teddy bear so many times.
Well, anyway, we've talked about the strip and dip lady. We've talked about the guy that gets stabbed in the crotch. Jason is such a non-presence in this movie.
Well, and that's the weird thing. Because, like, you want him to be more. And even when it's Mrs. Voorhees in the first one, she's looming. There's no looming here. Well, because at this point,
we don't even know it's Mrs. Voorhees still at the end of the first movie. In this one, we know Jason from the problem from the get-go.
Right. Anyway, after Terry's killed, we see Mrs. Jarvis arrive at home and the power's out.
Right.
That's where we are. And while searching for the kids, she's just killed off screen.
Yeah.
And
it's implied, but not shown.
Right. But, I mean, she's dead. She's killed off screen. We just don't get her because Trish and Tommy are the final people.
Yeah. So it's a final girl and her little brother goes full on berserker gong, but we'll get to that later.
But that's why when, Rob shows up, he matters because he's the only other adult in this whole movie.
And at one point, he and Trish leave Tommy alone. They take the dog, Gordon, and they go to the murder house. To leave a 12-year-old boy by himself without a dog when you know there's an adult man with a machete running around.
Well,
how stupid are these people?
The
whole thing, which is weird, is that they do a pretty good job of making Tommy Jarvis like a fairly regular kid. When there's like drunk older kids around, you want to pretend like you're a cool older kid, and like obviously he wants to see the girls like skinny dipping, but like then you go upstairs and you're like. And he's the littlest Tim Burton or something. Like, he has all these horror things. You're just like, I like Christmas and Halloween.
That might explain why he's able to do what he does. He's the most psychologically prepared of all of them, even if he's 12.
Yes, but that's really chicken shit nonsense. Because, like, at the end, first of all, he does the one thing which every horror... Like, This movie gets stars because he doesn't just throw the machete and walk away. He turns that skull to jelly.
Yeah.
And that's what you should do every single time. But at the end of the movie, they cut to the like the hospital that the sister is in, and he gets this gleam in his eye, like, maybe he's the new Jason. And you're just like, no.
No, that makes no sense.
Even though the doctor, that makes sense.
Even though the doctor, like, 2 minutes ago explicitly said it's perfectly normal for him to do what he did.
And he should have.
Well, before that happened.
Trish should have been freaking out when he went butt weasel and cut Jason in, like, 60 pieces.
Well, he did.
Well, before that happens, we get some scenes with... I called him Jason Hunter throughout my notes, but the guy who's
Rob.
Like, yeah, Rob. We get some scenes with him and Trish trying to fight Jason, but Jason ends up killing Rob.
Yeah, and the way it was shot, Jason was in the basement with Rob the entire time and was just lurking in the dark.
Yeah.
So he must have been like in there for like several minutes, and then he just takes down Rob in like about 5 seconds.
I did feel some suspense, though, when we saw... Jason, and I know Nick's looking at me, it's like suspense, really?
They yeah. manage it later on a couple times.
Well, a couple times, like when Jason's stalking Trish, because it's like, okay, I've just, as we're recording this, I played Resident Evil 8 not too long ago. It's like, Lady Dimitrescu, is that you?
That's right.
Totally.
Like, I don't get that.
Like when Trish is in Rob's tent and someone is coming up on them, on her, and then the machete comes down and it's Rob who thought it was Jason in his tent. That was actually well done.
Yeah, that's a fine scene. I just, the problem is for me, the tone on these movies generally is all over the place, right? Because you cut between like a sexy teen situation and then Jason killing someone. Like that's the whole thing. But generally it's building in suspense. This one, the suspense just derails and they're like, let's just watch Charlie Chaplin pornography for 20 minutes.
Can we at least talk about the scene where Jason's unmasked?
Okay, so I believe this is Tommy Jarvis throws the machete and cuts the mask off, and he goes, Rah!
Yeah, this is after I think it was Trish who brings the machete down on him
between his hand
and cuts through his hand all the way to the wrist. And I'm like, shit.
That's good. That's gory.
Well, and then Jason just looks at it and then keeps on trucking.
Yeah, I mean, that man is... I mean, a few minutes earlier, he had an 80s television brought down on his skull.
Yep.
Yep.
I mean, and this isn't like super ripped monster Jason later on. He's actually a much smaller person. Takes a licking and keeps on kicking.
Quote unquote smaller.
He's still Rutger Hauer. He's still, what, 7 feet tall? I mean, and he bear hugs this stuff. Like, and that's the other thing which they do well in this movie. Like, the machete meets no resistance. Right? Like, when he's cutting into someone, he just... It's like a fucking Reddit cake post. Like, it was a cake the whole time. Like, it's nonsense. But that's the killing machine. Like, it's terrible, and I'm sure it's in Mortal Kombat. But, like, Jason Voorhees versus the Terminator, like, that's what it feels to me like at this point. Right? Like, his head doesn't matter, nothing matters. He's just one arm machine god.
Right?
Yeah, basically. Which, that's another thing about this franchise. That had already been done so much better in the Halloween movies.
Sure, and this is where the two lines blur. Like, you could have Michael Myers Voorhees crossover in this one, and it wouldn't make any difference. Because, like, the first couple Friday movies are very different than the first Halloween, couple of Halloweens. But at this point...
Yeah.
One's more neck-breaky and one's more machete-y. But, like, that's why the sixth one of these is so much fun, because then you get back to the whole silliness of it. Like, oh my god, I'm gonna get naked and take a shower. Like...
Oh my god, this giant 8-foot zombie is killing me.
And he's resurrected by... voodoo, maybe?
I thought it was some sort of Frankenstein theory. He got struck by lightning.
Yeah.
Well, right. But he comes back to life in all of these, so it could be anything.
My personal favorite resurrection of Jason is when that coroner ate his heart.
Jason Goes to Hell, they got more exotic.
I mean, to be fair, we did Jason X, where they discover him on DVD in space... And they just bring him back.
And in that movie, he kills David Cronenberg.
He does. I mean, the scene also plays out like the Johnny B. Goode scene in Back to the Future. Jason Voorhees? The Jason Voorhees? Listen to this! And it just...
Chuck! Jason! It's your cousin Marvin! Marvin Voorhees!
You want to kill some sexy teens?
Well, listen to this!
But yeah, so they eventually cut his fucking face off.
And... Well, they cut his face off, and that's how we see... that's how we see...
Yeah, one of I think it was Tommy wings him. Like, he cuts the cable off the mask and gashes his face, but it's not... Yeah. Does not do enough damage.
Well, we see the machete go through his face, if I recall, and then
that's when they kill the hell out of him with that.
And then he slashes him through his right eye. Jason falls forward, and the machete very slowly.
Yes. Oh my god!
That was squicky.
That was phenomenal special effects.
Hey Matt, have you ever seen a Lucio Fulci zombie?
Great movie.
Is that the one where the zombie fights the shark?
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Good.
Well, I'm about to say, if you thought that was squeaky, you poor, naive child.
Yeah, you need to see it. It's good. It's really something. But at that point, then what happens, what Matt was saying was, they hug, Trish and Tommy embrace, like, oh, we did it. And then Jason starts clenching his fingers.
And then Tommy just chops him into chopped liver. But we forgot
Die!
But we forgot Tommy went full Rambo and shaved his head.
Badly.
Well, deliberately, so he looked like Jason as a kid, I guess?
Yeah, it's like psychological warfare.
Which happens in several of these. Like in the first one, when Jason is defeated by putting on his mom's sweater.
Think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not as familiar with the beginning of this franchise as I am with the end.
Yeah, later ones are better, but... anyway, and then we smash cut to Trish in a hospital, and Tommy's just there, still bald-headed.
Yep.
And she's like, oh, we did it, Jason, we did it. So my brother totally fucking killed this guy, like, just turned him into mashed potatoes. And the doctor's like, it's okay, kids sometimes, you know, video games and stuff.
Those Ataris, man, back in the day.
You ever Pong? You ever blow up the universe there, Tommy? And then he just smiles at the camera and winks, and then we smash cut to credits? Holy cow.
This was supposed to be the grand finale of Jason, and it's so weak.
It's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought they were trying to be creative by having a different survivor type, but...
But yeah. You would be mistaken.
So, Matt, final thoughts?
Don't bother.
Daniel?
This franchise doesn't get fun until the later entries, and I know some people hate them, but you know what? They are so goofy and ridiculous, they're addicting. I'd rather watch Jason Goes to Hell 100 more times before I ever see this one again.
To quote Nick, this is a wet fart of a movie.
Yes.
It's like... lame and mediocre and not that good until maybe the last bit of it, and that doesn't save the rest.
At least Tom Savini had good makeup effects.
Yeah, the effects are good. Was it last October where we did like the first of all these, or was it 2 October?
It was pre-COVID.
Yeah, okay, so we did the first one a million years ago. That one's great. This one is nothing. Like, at one point I watched through all of these and I gave this one a pass because it was okay. And like Crispin Glover looking for the corkscrew to get it stabbed through his hand, that's funny. But like, this is really nothing. Like, the 5th, 6th, and 7th one are just like, I'm just topless for no reason. Oh no, a machete! Like, if you're putting one of these on at a party, follow Sudsy's advice and go for like number 6 or number 8. Like, those are the ones that you can just kind of watch and enjoy.
Or go see Freddy versus Jason. That was intended as a comedy from the beginning.
Well, but like that's I think that falls into this. Like, it totally works. It's just like this one is just... Oddly, it feels safe in some ways. Like, this could be much more crazy violent or more nude silliness. It's nothing. Like, if this was the first one, the franchise never would have been picked up.
Yeah, no, wouldn't have been. This would have been every other lame slasher knockoff that existed in the 80s.
The ones that are all ripping off, you know, Craven or Carpenter, right? Like, Sleepover Massacre 7. Like, none of this matters. This is just, nothing. And I mean, I can guarantee you that people showed up just because it was called Friday the 13th. In the meantime, though, we've decided this year, obviously, because this is coming out in the summer, we're going to just do horror movies throughout the year. Because they're fun to do. And this, despite being a mediocre movie, was fun to talk about. In the meantime, we have another full season. Thanks for tuning into Season 8. Keep joining the Patreon, patreon.com/myopia. Thank you for reviewing us. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you for sharing us. We have fun stuff planned this season, including some potential crossovers. And, of course, Matt and Daniel are the core of this group, along with Noor and Jeremy. And so we appreciate you, all of us here at Myopia Movies, and thanks.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.